Public Safety Committee will come to order. Members, we're going to hear some, we'll hear the bonding requests for our division today. So before we begin, we do have a quorum, so I would ask if for a motion to approve the minutes of March 5th, 2014. Representative Rosenthal makes that motion. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. First on the agenda is House File 1822. Representative Dorhold. Representative Dorhold, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1822.
Thanks for having me. Should I be up yet? This is a bill for St. Cloud State Prison, otherwise known as Castle Grayskull, home to the second largest granite wall in the world, none other than to the Great Wall of China. These funds would allow, the true story, look it up, funds for a garage, health facilities, and the intake, and I don't know if Kathleen Lonergan is present to speak on other issues or if you have questions for myself.
Representative Dorhold, I don't know if it's just my age here, but I can't hear anything. Can you turn the sound up a little bit? Commissioner, do you want to, I know this is on the DOC's list, priority list. Do you want to explain the project a little bit?
Mr. Chair, I could skip to that point in the PowerPoint presentation if you'd like. And
oh, I see. Okay, well, let's see. How should we do this? Maybe we should just have your presentation, Representative Dorhold, and we can, because it's St. Cloud and Shakopee, and then we'll do the local projects. And then if you want to just sit there, you can. And Commissioner, you want to proceed with the presentation?
Sure, Mr. Chair, thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Carrie Carlson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Facilities Division for the Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections has three priorities on the governor's capital budget recommendation. The total request for this agency is $47,869,000. As you know, the DOC operates 10 facilities, 8 which are for adults and 2 which are for juveniles. Our first request is for $10 million for asset preservation. We use asset preservation to protect the investments that are made in our buildings and our state facilities. Use it to take care of OSHA issues, safety, health, fire marshal issues. Asset preservation money goes to building enhancements throughout the state in all of our facilities. This slide just shows that certainly we do create good jobs with these projects. We have over 1 million in shovel-ready projects, and actually our entire asset preservation need is about $100 million, excuse me, and so we have lots and lots of projects that we could use for this $10 million that would be coming to us. Many of our facilities are old. Our St. Cloud and Red Wing facilities were built in 1889, and our Stillwater facility was built in 1914, so we're celebrating 100 years with that facility this year.
So did you say you had $100 million worth of projects that you could do if you had funding?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct.
And so with the $10 million, is this a sort of a stopgap asset preservation, or are there going to be some problems that are going to cost the department and the state down the line because they're not getting fixed now?
Mr. Chair, we feel that this is an adequate amount of money to deal with the issues that come up. Of course, we always could use more asset preservation money, but we feel that we can make it with this $10 million. What happens is the facilities submit their needs to us at our central office, and Mr. Montgomery, who's testified before this committee before, is an architect and our capital resource manager, and he and Other leadership within the agency make decisions of how the funding gets dispersed based on life safety needs, security needs, and all of those kinds of factors. So we want to use our money very, very wisely for the best use for our agency. This chart just shows you some of the projects that we fund with asset preservation money. Our second project is the Shakopee fence, and it is a request for $5.381 million to construct the fence at the prison. This is our correctional facility that houses our female offenders. All custody levels of women who are incarcerated reside at this facility, from women serving life sentences for murder and others serving shorter sentences for property and drug crimes. The women's prison has been located in Shakopee for many, many years. And when we moved from the old facility across the street into this new facility in 1986, the population was much lower than it is today. There were 85 women who were incarcerated at that time. I was working at the facility at the time. We marched them across the street and went into the new buildings. Now there are over 600 women who are living and residing in that facility. So much, much has changed.
Commissioner, is the on your slide you talk about the offense will be non-intrusive. I know that this has been a long-standing issue in the area with the neighborhood not wanting some people not wanting the fence because of for obvious reasons, and others wanting it for safety reasons. Have you reached some kind of agreement with the community, obviously?
Mr. Chair, thanks for that question. The picture on this slide shows a concept of what the fence would look like. It's, you know, aesthetically appropriate for the neighborhood. There has been concern about that from some of the neighbors, and last year, before we were doing this presentation before your committee, we had community meetings and talked with them about the fence, talked with them about the type of women who are incarcerated at the prison, and there was a general agreement that if we're going to build a fence, this type of fence would be supported. And also, you'll see later in the next couple of slides, there's a letter from our mayor of Shakopee who supports the fence and this concept of having a fence that's not the traditional prison fence.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
So the purpose of a fence in a correctional facility is to deter an escape, detect when an escape is in progress, delay that escape to happen so the staff have time to respond and recover an escapee. We need a fence at this facility to improve public safety. The fence reduces that risk of escape, and it also reduces the risk of introduction of contraband and intrusion onto the fence. This slide just shows you that it's a letter from the mayor, and it shows that they are in support of the fence at this time, and we are so appreciative of that. You can see by this slide where the facility...
Commissioner, Representative Baird is in support of this?
Mr. Chair, I do not know the answer to that question.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry. This slide shows where the facility is located, and you can see that our neighbors are an elementary school, a church, softball fields, and many, many houses. So, as I said earlier, there have been vast changes in the population of the facility over the years, and since 1995, 8 offenders have escaped. Staff are aware of 19 offenders who have plan to escape, and we have inmates housed out of state and also in our segregation unit because of escape risks. We did have an escape from the prison in December of 2013, so fairly recently. A woman just very without a lot of thought and planning just decided that she wanted to leave and ran, and staff saw her running, called local law enforcement immediately. She was apprehended and located in a residential area. She was hiding under a shrub or a tree, and they located her and had her in custody within 25 minutes. So we're fortunate of, you know, that the staff observed the escape happening and that we could get her back into our custody very quickly. But it just, you know, it's indicative of the population that we work with. There's a lot of young people who are impulsive, and for her, it was just her decision. She had no specific plan, had no money on her to speak of. She was just going to leave and get back to see her kids. Just a couple more pictures of the fence, and we've gone through these previously. This just shows the vast difference in the population, the growth, the number of people who are at the prison for person offenses and sex offenses, murders, the number of women with life or life without parole. Because we don't have a fence, if there are serious security concerns with women, we will either transfer the woman to our segregation unit where she has very restricted programming, and that's a concern for all of us, or we'll house her in using the Interstate Corrections Compact and house her in another state. That happens right now. We have four people on that status, and then, you know, the detriment is that they're away from their family and support, who are most likely in the Minnesota area. So we've talked about the fence keeping inmates in, but it's also to keep intruders out. And since 2007, we have logged at least 32 intrusions or instances of suspicious activity. People coming onto the grounds, some people don't realize that they are on a prison grounds. They think it's maybe a community college or something like that. And when we tell them you're on prison grounds, they're, you know, startled by that. Some people come onto the grounds, we believe, for nefarious reasons, to drop contraband, to try to make contact with their person who is incarcerated. And it creates a great danger for our staff who have to approach these people, you know, and intervene or try to locate contraband that might be coming into the facility before the inmate is able to get it and ingest it. So, our
excuse me, Commissioner, one question here, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for talking about the Shakopee. And Mr. Chair, I just want to state that, you know, I'm on the Bonnie Committee, and the Bonnie Committee did tour this facility along with St. Cloud and other facilities. And, you know, I worked in the Northeast Regional Correction Center, as you know, Mr. Chair, and, you know, that facility doesn't have a fence either, but there's, if you would visit that, which we did and which I worked at, you know, there's lots and lots of forest and other things surrounding that, which is difficult for an inmate to, a resident to leave. But as you go into the Shakopee, it's a beautiful campus, by the way. Beautiful. And you can see, I can see how people wander on there thinking, you know, what is this place? It's gorgeous. Is there a little park bench to sit on or whatever? And there are benches there, but Mr. Chair, as we toured it, you know, it really becomes apparent as you visit the facility that a fence is needed there. And one of the questions that we asked is exactly what you asked. How does the residents feel now about it? And Commissioner, you told us that we were told the same thing, that there have been community meetings that have generated support for the type of fence and for, you know, for the multiple reasons of why the fence needs to go in there. So, you know, really, it until you really set foot on that on the ground, you don't really see the importance of this. But it is an important project, and I just wanted to reiterate that. Thank you.
I've been there, but I do know it's been a long source of contention with the neighborhood. So, it's all worked out, though, right?
Mr. Chair, I will never say that there's 100% agreement that there should be a fence at Shakopee, but it's accepted, generally accepted. And Representative Ward, thank you so much for your comments.
So we want to talk about St. Cloud now?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Our third request is to fund a project at the St. Cloud facility. It's our intake facility for adult male offenders. There are several components to this project, and the cost is $32,488,000. It includes construction of a new health service unit, remodeling of existing space for an intake area, and construction of a loading dock and warehouse outside the secure perimeter. The project is about improving safety for our staff and the offenders who reside in that facility by improving the layout and adding safety and security features to the areas that I listed. Due to space constraints, we have an inadequate number of holding cells in our intake area and other processing areas, and we cannot separate offender movement in and out of the facility in that intake area. People are commingling in hallways where there should be very, very separate controlled movement. And additionally, existing spaces aren't in compliance with accessibility codes to meet the needs of disabled offenders. So actually, this is the second part of our project, but it's the renovation of space for a new intake area. We have approximately 700 offenders that are transferred in and out of our facility at St. Cloud on a monthly basis. And the existing space was designed to serve many fewer offenders. So we are able to, with this new design, visually and physically separate those offenders who are coming into the facility and those who are being transferred out to our other facilities. The existing hallways are way too narrow, and when a disturbance occurs in the area of the staff, the space is very, very tight for the staff to manage through and remove offenders to another location when they're fighting. So there's also not adequate space for all the functions that need to occur in an intake area. And right now, the staff are really cobbling together broom closets and other spaces to accomplish the numerous types of projects and processes that they need to accomplish, doing fingerprints and photos and height and weight and all those kinds of initial screening questionnaires. And so we want to create space that's adequate for the staff and also safe for them to work in. So actually, this would be the first part of the project. It's constructing a new health services unit. The current space was designed to serve about 600 offenders, and the population there today is about 1,000. So it's both inadequate in size and configuration for the staff to safely and effectively deal with the increased population. In addition to the routine medical and dental exams and medical treatment that the health service staff do at this facility, they also support and provide minor medical procedures like stitches. They do optometry, and also physical therapy happens in this area. So offenders come to the health service area not only for an intake exam, but they also come for other medical appointments, for sick call, and for medication distribution. The photo that you see in this slide shows the security staff who are stationed in an open area in the health service unit. And, you know, good security protocol would put that staff behind a glassed-in wall so that those door controls are secured and inaccessible to the offender population. And that's what we'll do when we are able to construct this new building. Then, to just kind of visualize how it happens, we would construct the new health services area, and the existing health services area would then be renovated and turned into that new renovated intake space that I talked about in the earlier slide. The final part of this project is constructing a loading dock and a secure warehouse that would be outside the secure perimeter. And the value in this part of the project is that right now there are some trucks that are too large to fit through the Sally Port gates that were constructed way back in the 1800s. And so both gates have to be opened at the same time to get the truck into the facility to the loading dock warehouse area. That's a huge security concern for a prison. We really don't want to do that ever. And the staff have to go through all kinds of measures in order to make it safe and secure for that truck to enter in those kinds of conditions. What we would do is construct a loading dock on the exterior, not inside the secure perimeter, and then warehouse space would be renovated from that old intake area, and the trucks would be able to unload without having to go through the truck gate. And we actually think that we'd divert about 90% of the traffic that goes in and out of the facility through that truck gate on a monthly basis. So it's a significant security enhancement. Right now they have over 1,000 vehicles that enter through that truck gate per quarter. So reducing that would be significant. So that's our quick overview of our agency's projects. We appreciate your consideration, and I welcome any further questions.
Are there any questions for the Deputy Commissioner? Commissioner Roy, you want to say anything, or has everything been said? Got it. Representative Dorholt, you want to come back so we can, do you have any comments about the St. Cloud project before we refer your bill on? And
I have no other comments, but stand for any questions if you have them.
Okay, very good. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak in favor or opposition of any of the bonding proposals? Okay, then. So then the chair will recommend that House File 1822 be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. And I'm assuming then that the Shakopee one is just going there. Does that need? It's already part of it. Okay. That's it. I'll make that motion. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dorholt.
Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner Carlson, Commissioner Roy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, so next up is House File 179, Representative Lilly. Welcome to the committee. Chair will... We'll move House File 179 for Representative Lilly. This is the Maplewood Regional Public Safety Training Facility.
Your chair.
Representative Cornish.
Just before we start in on these bonding requests, I would have a request that, so that I don't look like I'm railing on anybody's certain project, this is an overall request that I'm not a big fan of the separate police training centers. I'm a fan of the Camp Ripley Center, and a lot of law enforcement issues, you rent space up there. So during the testimony of each project, I'd like to find out why they don't use Camp Ripley when all these other police departments are renting it for use, and then why, my concern is a domino effect, just like I would rather have just have the BCA lab instead of labs all around the state. I would kind of like to ramp Camp Ripley or a central location, because we've got people that are fairly near Camp Ripley, aren't even using it. They want to build their own center. So just keep that in mind, a kind of a justification why we should start. Because once we start this, it's kind of like civic centers, justice centers, all over the state. We see a domino effect. The next one wants to jump on. And so that's my concern. So if you could just keep that in mind during your testimonies.
Yeah,
thank you,
I'll,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cornish, you and I are think quite alike on this issue. And we sent out a training facility evaluation form that's at least included in this project. I don't know if the other bonding proposals have completed the form, but this comes out of the DPS Public Safety Training Facilities Needs Assessment Guide, and this has been a long-standing issue. So we've asked, I haven't had a chance to review it, but they have filled it out, so they're going to make a they will make their best case for why this is a appropriate use for state bonding money for the expansion of their existing training center. But with that, so you understand Representative Cornish's concerns and the chair's concerns, I guess. But so Representative Lilly, you want to introduce the project and your guests, and we'll take testimony.
Good
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And having served on this committee in the past, I hear your concerns and respect them. Just a quick story before we get going. I was with Representative Ward on over at Shakopee, and I had to chuckle because the cemetery across the street has a fence, but not the women's facility. So I just thought that was interesting. And you know, no one's fighting to get in or out of there, I guess, I wouldn't think. But not too much humor this morning, I guess, Mr. Chair, huh? okay. This is the East Metro Fire Training Center, and it's a phase two of a project that has been passed by a previous legislatures. And if you were to go over to the East Metro right now, you would see that it's well on its way, and things are popping up into the sky. And with past investment, this facility will serve 24 different communities in the East Metro, which are predominantly volunteer folks. So it's a little different component of than the full-time firefighters. But I'm going to pass it to some of the folks I have here, and they can go through and describe what they're doing now, and then what phase two of the project is. And there's a lot of exciting components for this, I think, as for us as legislators. Again, it's the convenience. It's the serving multiple communities, and then we're also incorporating the local community college too, so there's ongoing education and that sort of thing, which I think is really good for us as members, and I think for our future for the state of Minnesota, and training folks that can find jobs in these careers. But I'm going to pass to Chief Anderson first from the city of Oakdale, and then Chief Tamala, or Chief Lucan, rather. Sorry, I went with the police chief there. The fire chief from Maplewood will be next. So,
Chief,
thank
Anderson,
you, Mr. Chair.
You're going first. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Anderson, a fire chief with the Oakdale Fire Department, and I represent the Washington County Fire Chiefs Association in this project. Mr. Chair and members, this project was started back in late 2011 through a grant from the legislature in the amount of $3 million, along with some local funding portions. The project to date has converted some property formerly owned by MnDOT into a training facility. All in the past couple of years, there was a fair amount of dirt work that had to take place on the site. We ran utilities to the site. There were no utilities at all prior to this project. So we've got water, sewer, electric, and fiber optic cable onto the site now. And as Representative Lilly mentioned, the first phase of the project is under construction. Currently, there are two buildings involved at this point. There's a two-story burn building, which simulates a two-story residential home with attached garages. In that building will be some propane-fired props, and there are some depictions of some of those props in the handout that we provided you, where we can simulate different fires that firefighters may come across in a residential setting, a kitchen fire, a bedroom fire, a car fire in the garage, a car fire outside the garage. So those type of scenarios, and they can be done in a very safe manner in that we have complete control of the fire. Because it's propane fired, if something goes bad, you can hit a switch to shut the fire off. And yet it simulates fairly close to realistic fire conditions. We have the ability to add theatrical type smoke in there, so you can also add the smoke component to the project. And I would say in answer to Representative Cornish's concerns, you know, one of the issues with having the regional facilities, particularly for volunteer firefighters, is it becomes an issue of being able to get to the facility with your firefighters, provide the training, and at the same time that we're doing this training, we have to be able to provide protection to the communities that we serve. So, for instance, we currently train now in a facility at St. Paul Fire, and it's about, for our department, it's about a half-hour drive to get there. Then there's set up and clean up. You run the drill, and then there's the drive back. And I can only take about half the department at any one time. We have to leave the other people back in town to provide protection. So the further away these facilities get from where the firefighters are, the more difficult it gets for the firefighters to make use of the facility. So that is part of the reason that this is some very specialized training. I understand I'm very aware of the facility up at Camp Ripley, and I certainly think there are, you know, components of training that both fire and law enforcement can use at that site, but there's also a need in my mind for these more regional facilities with more specialized training.
Chief, can I just, I wished we had a map here of all the regional training centers, but so you say that your testimony was that you currently have to have your folks come to St. Paul for training.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. We rent the facility. It is not a regional facility, actually. It belongs to St. Paul Fire Department, but it's down off at Energy Park Drive near the current Midway Stadium.
Right. And does that meet your training needs? It's just the distance that you're saying. How far is it from Maplewood? It seems like
from our station, it takes us probably 20 to 25 minutes driving time in fire apparatus to get down there.
Is that considered a long time?
No, but not in itself. But I think added with all the that is an older facility that doesn't have the propane burning. We burn what we call Class A, so we're burning old pallets and straw. Which means there's a lot of setup and cleanup time on the front end and the back end of that training scenario. Also, that facility is currently at the point that it needs a lot of work and a lot of repair, to the point that St. Paul Fire has been involved in the East Metro facility in the planning of this facility.
So I don't know the answer to this. As a representative from St. Paul, I probably should, but at one time St. Paul was going to modernize that facility, and they were also going, they were making the claim that then they would be the regional center. So are you now going to be the regional center, and St. Paul's and all of the surrounding communities are going to be using your facility?
I guess I don't want to answer specifically for St. Paul, although I can tell you that they were heavily involved, their training people were heavily involved in the planning process for this facility. So Without, in writing, my perception of that would be is, yes, they're in the discussions we've had, they're very interested in using this facility. Whether they keep their own or not also, I guess I can't answer.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the frustration, Representative Lilly, is like, you know, it's just like it's never ending, and everyone claims they're regional centers, but we can't keep building multiple regional centers. I mean, it's... But anyway, that's sort of the long-standing issue here. But I have no idea what St. Paul is planning on doing with their facility. So do you have any other testimony?
I don't.
Okay.
Turn it over to Chief Lucan. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Steve Lucan, Fire Chief for the City of Maplewood. I'd just like to point out a few things on some of the work that we have here, if I may. First of all, this is the existing site that we have right now, where we're at with it on the actual construction side of it. This portion of these two buildings will be up and operational by June 2nd for the portion that we can use with it. And as Chief Anderson mentioned, we're actually here looking for a few other dollars to complete the... Thank you. So that's the building. That's the current building. You do that good. That's the current building that we have and the two sites that we have. So this is a regional facility. This is a regional facility that is going to be up and running, like I mentioned, in June. You would like to take this one. As you can see, the two white areas that are still on the spot, that's where we're asking for the 1.8 to fill in, are those two locations. And you do have those in, and I'll let you hold this one up. And those existing two spots will be the commercial side. But one thing that is lacking just about at any of the training facilities, even in the region, that you will find is actual commercial training area where it's set up like a commercial strip mall type of a deal. There'll be two buildings together that we can go in and utilize. The other big thing we're finding in a lot of the communities today is that there are apartments going above a lot of these commercial buildings, especially in a lot of the new streetscapes and that are being put together. So on the top of this building, there will actually be apartment buildings that we can utilize to be more realistic in the types of fires that we do come across quite often. The other one that we have here is what we're calling our simulation building. It'll have a small little classroom, and inside of that, you can do felony stops. Now, I would like to point out that police are actively involved in this with us, and that these buildings can be used for them in the winter for felony stops to practice their traffic stuff as well. And also our SWAT teams and that have very much been a part. Ramsey County's in helping us put some ideas together as to how they can utilize that for their training as well. So other than an actual range that's not on the site at this time, police have been actively involved in this along with the, as Representative Lilly mentioned, Century College for their Firefighter 1 and 2 training programs that they can have at this site. One of the things I would like to point out as well is that we are only using, out of the 12 acres right now, we are only using about 5.5 of the 12 acres. At some point, while the MnDOT is using that other spot, at some point we can have that, or we will be able to pick up that additional land as we need it to be able to become larger. So we have plenty of room for expansion, whether at some point there would be a firing range put on there. I do know there has been talk between St. Paul and some of the other communities about whether or not another range needs to be put together. I do know that the sheriff and Ramsey and Washington counties, both of them have been talking about how to better utilize the one that's in existence. So this is an all-inclusive type of a location, and right now, though, we have the fire stuff in, but we do have plenty of room for expansion at some point in time down the future. So this is where we're at today, and what we're asking in the other 1.8 is for those two additional buildings to finish that. I guess you have little pictures, but bigger pictures, I think, are sometimes better. And this is just some of the training props that we have that we would like to put into this facility and have. This is what we call a flashover. Firefighters go into a hallway, and all of a sudden there's enough heat and gases build up, and it flashes over their heads and can become very, very dangerous. To the best of my knowledge, I don't even believe Edina has this, to the best of my knowledge. I think we'll be the only ones in the actual area that have these kinds of props on some of these to be able to do that kind of fire training. The other one is a simulation car. There's actually a garage, a couple of garages built onto the house, and actually we'll have simulated car training so that we can actually train as if we had an actual car inside a garage of a burning house, that whether it started in the garage or it moved to it, and this provides us with that same type of training. And then the last one again is this would be a kitchen fire. This would allow us to, which we see a lot of, which is a vast majority of how fires start in homes, this would be another area that we could do that. One of the things, and I know Chief Anderson pointed out, but I would really like to hit on this, training today is more about safety. These types of props, this kind of training, provide safety to our firefighters. Other than like when we have in the past, which are very hard to get, when we could get an old home in a community that needed to be burned down, safety is only can go so far in those, and we do our very best. In these cases, if something were to go wrong, first of all, it's theatrical smoke, which wouldn't hurt anyone, and second of all, with the push of one button, we can shut these down in a matter of 30 seconds, evacuate all the smoke out of it if there was a problem. As it showed in the report, we are one of the facilities at that time that was talked about. We are to the point where we are today, and we're really here because we really would like to build it out to the final stage and get the remainder of the buildings that we need to do this to be able to train at 100% at this facility. And that's really where we're at today, is that we really are asking to complete the training facility that the legislatures, you folks, were so gracious enough to give us already of that $3 million, and we just want to take it to the next level and finish this out. And again, if you'll notice in your packet the number of regional departments, and this is between counties, and the accessibility to this is tremendous. And we just want to assure you that the dollars that you have given us have been spent well, and the money in the future will be spent as well in the best fiduciary as possible. So with that, Jeff and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Lilly, this is the funding. When you originally proposed this, was the initial funding request $4.8 million for phase one, phase two? Was there originally going to be phase one, phase two, and how could there be such a dramatic shortfall?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe the original request is around, I don't know, $3 million is sticking more in my mind.
That's what you got from the bonding bill is $3
right.
million. That's what you requested, I believe.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out why you have a $1.8 million shortfall, and then was it always envisioned that you'd have a two-phased program that you would be coming back for additional bonding money?
I don't. Mr. Chair, I'm going to yield to Chief Lucan.
No, yeah, the initial request was for the $3 million in bonding money. The initial project back in 2009, actually, is when this started. And the initial estimates for the project were about a $6 million completed project at that time. And then we were awarded the $3 million in 2011, it was. So that, along with the additional funds that have been spent, we're at about the $4.8 million now. And the project cost has gone up slightly from the 2009 estimate of $6 million. So I think at the 4.8 plus the 1.8 that we're asking for now, we're going to be just over the $6 million price. But a portion of that has to do with that we're 5 years down the road from those estimates, and that there were some costs, unforeseen costs, involved with the project that were not initially involved in the initial assessment.
I guess I don't remember there being two phases to the project when this came before the committee 2 years ago, or 2 years ago.
Mr. Chair and members, luckily we have a very talented, able staff, but and then Chief Anderson kind of alluded to it, with the costs have gone up, with some of it, I think you're correct. I don't remember a phase two, at least as far as we knew about, but there was some problems with the site. It was donated, or basically from MnDOT, and to be quite honest, they dumped a lot of the highway kill there, and that probably wasn't the worst of it, but there was, the site had a lot of corrections problems, delayed the project, and just costs have gone up. Just so other factors. So to fully build it out to the extent that they're hoping to achieve the goals is, they're hoping to get this additional $1.8 million.
So, Representative, well, I'm just still confused. So if you need $1.8 million, why are you asking for $3 million?
Mr. Chair, I believe that is a correction that needs to be made. In fact, we talked with the office yesterday about it's 1.8 is the actual request. That $3 million listed, I think, in the House file was brought forward from the initial request. It should be $1.8 million is the correct amount. And I think an addendum is underway.
Do you want to correct this now, Representative Lilly, or do you?
I'd be open to a motion to adjust it to the $1.8 million, but if that's allowable. Yeah. But that's our fault. I thought that I had contacted. I misunderstood what you were saying. I thought you were talking more about phase one and two. But, yes, it was the bill that I introduced, you're correct, was for $3 million. And that was given to me. But that is not what the need is. It's $1.8
million. We have a couple of questions, and maybe we can get some language to amend the bill here. Representative Rosenthal and then Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lilly. And to the chiefs, I'm supportive of these types of facilities, but I'm just curious how often your departments use them, and sort of dovetails back to the Chair and Representative Cornish's comments. I have the Dyna facility in my community, and I drive by there often, and I never see it being used, and I'm wondering what type of use you can expect.
That's a very good question, and thank you. The average departments that we have train at least weekly in some cases. So on an average, it's a 2 to 3 hour training time that would be there. One of the unique things about this, it allows more departments to be there at one time because you can use one building versus the other. And if we are able to put that simulation building in, we can do that. Also that more and more of the departments are adding some full-time staff to it that will be there during the days. So we think that this could be used anywhere between on a yearly span anywhere between 1,500 to 2,000 hours are available that we could use at that facility that would be available for people to use. Some of the departments will use it more than others. Obviously, if you're a little closer, you might use it a little more than others do. I do know that this, as Chief Anderson mentioned, the City of St. Paul will be utilizing this facility as well. And if you take a look at the total number of firefighters, we're probably, you know, well over that 2,500 to 3,000 firefighters that could have availability to be using that site. And again, I'd like to point out is that this is the only thing that we have in the East Metro area to use for our firefighters, as well as the accessibility to get to that site from 694 Highway 5 and so on.
Mm-hmm. Is that Rosenthal? Chief, you said that St. Paul is going to be using the facility. Is there a reason why there's not a letter of support in your packet from the City of St. Paul like you have from all of these other communities?
You know, it's probably one of our oversights. We haven't gotten it, but as Chief Anderson mentioned, they've been actively involved in the design and build of this, and with the intention that they will be using this facility, just as that Chief Anderson mentioned, because theirs is quite old and needs a significant repair as we move forward. Chief Tim Butler has been actively involved with us and sat in many of our meetings as well, and so I can safely say that they will be actively using this site. To what extent, I don't know, but they have told us they will be using it.
Representative Luglum. Oh, Johnson. I'm sorry. Getting beyond. Ahead of myself. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly.
Yes, sir.
And fire chiefs. A question I have, well, first of all, as a former firefighter, I know how valuable the training is. I've spent many hours in the smoke trailers and the flame trailers from Alexandria Technical College, and it's unbelievable training that you can experience, and they can put you into situations that I don't believe you'd ever get into in an actual house fire, because you generally wouldn't go into a fire if you're properly trained to go into a fire in those conditions. That said, as to how valuable training is, there's also costs of the training. Now, you said you've already spent or come up to receive $3 million from the 2011, and you're requesting another 1.8 to finish. There's two counties and 25 cities involved in this regional area that you're talking about. Have any of those jurisdictions help support this project with any type of financials, with finances and getting the funds available? Because what it appears you're looking for is for the state to pay for the entire project. And if it's going to be a community-based project, even though regionally, I believe that those communities should also be part of this.
Chief Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. At this point, there is input from the communities. Ramsey County has put about $425,000 into the project at this point, and the City of Maplewood, where the project is actually located, has about $280,000 into the project. So, of local money that's come right out of those specific cities. The other communities at this point have not been asked to pay a share of the building costs of the project. However, the plans to operate it are through a joint powers agreement. So there would be two ways that departments could use this facility, is that they could either become a member of a joint powers agreement in which they would pay an annual fee to use the facility, which would help offset the operating costs, or if they chose not to become a member of the joint powers agreement, the site would be available on a rental basis to those, either within those two counties or, quite frankly, from anywhere in the state, that if somebody wanted to rent the site, it would certainly be open for them.
Representative Johnson. Just to follow up on his question, I just want to be clear. I mean, I'm assuming the Capital Investment Committee will be going into this more thoroughly, but So Ramsey County's put money in, the City of Maplewood's put money in, so roughly $600,000. But yet, in your when you submitted your evaluation form, I see that the local cost share, you say the local cost share will be $2.63 million. So the money is not secured at this point. You're anticipating that you need that to complete on top of the additional $1.8 million to Chief Lucan.
Mr. Chair, thank you. What that shows at 2.6 is that those are all the dollars that have been committed to that we have on hand, and so these are all the dollars, as you can see, that we have gotten for that we have put forward on that as well. The grant from Ramsey County, the city's EFF fund, St. Paul Regional Water, these are all dollars that we have already accepted as part of this to put into the facility.
So then you have received a local match of $2.63 million. Okay, very good. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope I didn't miss anything when I had to step out. Really a bit of a comment. I had the opportunity when I was mayor to serve on the Champlin Anoka Fire Board, so I'm pretty familiar with some of these training issues. And I know in our city we spent a lot of money training our volunteer firefighters, and I think it's vitally important. These people are volunteers. There is turnover, and we know that some of our older firefighters are retiring, people that have been around a long time, and we can expect a big influx of younger people that do have to be trained. And our training budget was very substantial in Champlin and Anoka, but we view that as a very, very good investment because training saves lives. Training saves lives, not just from the firefighters, but the people that are victims of the fire. So generally, I'm pretty supportive of things like this because I've seen it. I've seen what training will do and the results that you can get. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kelly, then Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, are the training needs the same for every department? Are the training needs the same for Marine and the St. Croix as they are for Maplewood, as they are for Cottage Grove?
Chief Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The requirements for firefighters across the state of Minnesota, whether paid, career, or volunteer, are the same set of standards that we're all required to meet. There's a Firefighter 1 certification, Firefighter 2 certification. Those are based basically on a national standard put out by the NFPA, or National Fire Protection Association. And we're all required. There's not a specific requirement, but it's a generally accepted standard that everybody trains to that same standard. Now, there may be some differences from one department to the next. Our two departments train together, so we do the same type of training. Marine on the St. Croix does very similar training. They may not do the exact same training that we do, and I think some of it gets a little specific to what are the hazards in your own community, and you train to meet the response to the type of hazards you may run across in your own community. So there are, the Firefighter 1 class that Century College runs has firefighters from across the region that all attend the same class, get the exact same training. That's their starting point.
Mr. Chair.
Kelly.
Thank you. I guess you hit on what I wanted to ask about is there may be differences depending on the environment, depending on the rural versus metro areas. And this is just an observation, but maybe a suggestion for you if this moves on to capital investment. And Mr. Chair, even though we don't have a letter of support from St. Paul Department, I can probably tell you what it's going to say. So instead of copying and pasting 19 letters, maybe it would be nice to know what that individual training, what that training is doing for every department, and have them put a little effort into telling us why they need it in their communities. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and members, we have a couple of members here, and I don't know if they've been contacted by their communities, but Representative Lohmer represents Lake Elmo, and that's a community that would be part of, I imagine one of the letters was theirs, and then Representative Kiefer representing Woodbury. I know they're part of this group, but training's gotten a lot more complicated. When we were kids, you just they'd burn down a house, and you could find these houses, but they're harder to find. There's chemicals, there's pollution, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of and the dangers. So that's why these facilities are just are so vital and important. And then this one with the higher level, too, it, you know, with the more of an apartment scenario, you just can't, you know, I mean, I don't remember ever seeing an apartment burn as a kid or, you know, we've all seen houses that fire departments have burned down, but I've never seen a apartment building, you know, so they can recreate those scenarios and the safety thing. But I was shocked to find out how much investment, like the, you know, Representative Uglum, I'm sorry if I can't exactly right, but yeah, what he was saying about his community. I mean, it's a major investment for each of these communities, all of our communities, to hire a firefighter. So I think it, I heard like $7,500 of investment and training in each firefighter. And quite honestly, in suburbia, there's quite a bit of turnover. You know, volunteer, you may get a job somewhere else. You may, I mean, there's, you know, your kids might get busy with sports or, you know, whatever it is. So there's a lot of turnover, and there's, you know, so don't think that the communities aren't panning up and doing anything. I mean, they're doing a lot, and being close, I mean, being volunteer, it's a big thing. I hate to bring that up, being metro versus rural. I know how far you guys have to drive for so many things, and I sympathize for that. But it is a factor here in the metro to get volunteers to be able to serve and to volunteer in these farms. I'm sorry, that wasn't a question.
Yeah, I want to try to get through this because we have two more bills. So we have Representative Simonson, Lohmer, and Neuberger, and then we should really move this on unless we need, otherwise we'll have to have you come back at a later time. Mm-hmm. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lilly. I'm going to support your bill today because I do think it's a good idea, and I think, you know, halfway through the project, it would be really improper of me to try to stop that at this point. But I do want to go on record and say that as future requests come forward through this committee from a public safety policy standpoint, what I really want to hear is kind of a statewide plan. I really want to put the Chiefs Association and the Fire Department Association on the spot here and say, you guys got to come forward with a plan, because I hear what you're saying about response times, and I understand it. But if our model is, if our plan is that we can't respond, we can't have a training facility any more than 20 minutes from our jurisdiction, you can't imagine the number of facilities we're going to have. So I want to see a plan that's supported by the fire service organizations as we go forward that kind of gives us some direction in a policy sense of what this is going to look like going forward, because I agree with the concept. And like I said, I'm going to support your project, but I'm just going to go on record and say that as new projects come forward, just be forewarned, I'm going to ask that question.
So Simon said, I'm going to get you a copy of this. It was done in 2009. We have a plan. It's just that nobody follows it. But we have it. Representative Lohmer, Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be quick in my question here. I just wanted a clarification. This facility will be offered free of charge to the communities that are listed here, or do they have to pay for their time?
Chief Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. No, there will be a fee to use the facility. There's going to be the operating costs to run this facility on an annual basis, and along with that, there may be consumables that you use. For instance, if we go there and train and use the propane burn props, we're burning propane. So the departments that use the facility would be billed back for consumables, and they will pay some sort of either a rental fee, or you'll pay a fee to be a member of the Joint Powers Agreement, which then gives you access to use the site, and the funds from that are going to be used to pay the annual operating expenses to run the facility.
Okay. So, Representative Lilly, are you okay with the amendment then to get the dollar amount that you had requested?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and my apologies for not having that correct. Okay.
Then the chair will move that on line 1.7 we delete $3 million and insert $1.8 million, and on line 1.14 delete $3 million and put $1.8 million.
Yes, sir.
So that's the motion. Any discussion? And Representative Lilly's in support of that. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. The chair will recommend that House File 179 be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Any discussion? Representative Lilly, you want to have any closing comments?
No, I thank you for the discussion, and I think we were mentioned in that report. I'm pretty sure, and I haven't read it for a couple of years. You encouraged me to read it at the time, but I'm quite sure in East Metro training. But I don't want to stir a hornet's nest, so I brought it up. Might be too late.
Is there anyone from the audience that wants to speak on this bill? If not, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Aye. It now is in capital investment. Representative
thank you, Lyon. Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then Representative Murphy, and we'll be done. Representative Bly, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2339.
Thank you, Chair. This is a request from the City of Montgomery for $1,330,000 to help with a public safety facility in the City of Montgomery. I did, prepare handout about the public safety facility, and if you look at the first page inside, you see the various townships and other cities that this facility does provide service to. The City of Montgomery is a city concerned about making sure that its citizens are protected, and that as part of the kind of statewide services we want to make sure that are there, the City of Montgomery has found itself in a situation where it would be difficult for it to completely fund this project on its own, so it's asking for additional funds through the bonding bill. And I have with me the City Administrator, who can kind of talk a little more specifically about the needs and the project itself.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Heck, and I'm the City Administrator for the City of Montgomery. And our situation, as Representative Bly indicated, is that we do have a need for housing or expanded fire and ambulance service. If you take a look at, I believe it's the fourth page in, with the ambulance partway pulled out of the garage, you can see that the mirrors on our ambulance rig are within, as it backs in, about a half inch of the garage doors. We actually have carpet up alongside of the wall to protect the doors and the mirrors as the ambulance goes in. The fire station, that's not all of our equipment. We have three garages with two trucks in each bay. We also have equipment stored off-site in a rented facility because we can't house it all in one location. As you go through, you will also notice that our locker facilities for the firefighters to store their gear are right there in the bay where the fire trucks are. So as they're running in to get their gear, people are also trying to get in and out of fire trucks, which causes difficulty for our firefighters in getting themselves ready to go, and also creates a potential safety hazard as trucks are rolling out. There are no shower facilities or washing facilities for equipment. When the firefighters come back from a fire or a response, there's also, because our ambulance serves a larger area, our volunteer ambulance folks, attendants, and our ambulance service and the fire service are 100% voluntary, paid volunteers. There are no full-time staff associated with either operation. We run 24/7 on our ambulance, and those who are on call, some come from out of town and need a place to stay. There is no adequate sleeping facilities for residential quarters in the firehouse. They go upstairs into the loft, and there is a pull-out couch that the ambulance crew, if they're there, stay on. Also, we have female volunteers that are both on the ambulance crew and the fire crew, and there's no adequate real facilities for the female volunteers to utilize in the department. The other component of this is, if you go towards the back of the document, you'll see, I think it's the last few pages, that's our fire, or that's our police department. It's an old commercial building that was a garage, office, and warehouse, and that's where our police department is. We don't have a very secure location for evidence. We don't have locker rooms. We don't have interview rooms. It is a basically a metal-clad pole shed that we have our police department in. As a part of this plan, if the if we can get make this work, is we bring the fire or the police department up to City Hall and remodel that facility so that we can house the police department there as well and provide them with adequate interview, evidence storage, and other things that most police departments should have that we currently don't have. Representative Bly also referenced our difficulties in the city of Montgomery with funding this. The city, to be perfectly honest, overbuilt their facilities in roads and water and wastewater in the hopes that they were going to have development occurring in the 2000s like many cities did. Unfortunately, those developments didn't pan out. Three of them went bankrupt. One of the developments actually went tax forfeit. So the city finds itself in a position where we're responsible for the bonds that were issued on behalf of the developers to put in the infrastructure, and our residents are now having to pick up the cost of that because the development didn't come. As a result, we are very hamstrung in providing new facilities for our firefighters and our police officers, and even going after our current facilities. We have committed, if the legislature provides us with this bonding money, we are committed to bonding for the balance of the amount, and we are working on agreements with the townships and the cities that we service to create agreements with those jurisdictions to also help pay for this new facility as well. So I stand for questions.
Questions? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Administrator, you mentioned that you're committed to bonding for the balance of the amount of the project. What would that be?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are actually asking for less than the full amount from the state to put this project together. I believe we're asking for about 40% of the total cost to be provided through the bonding bill. So we would be picking up about 60% of the cost of the facility, so approximately $1.8 million or so we'd be looking to bond for and have agreements with our townships and cities to help us cover that cost.
Very good. Thank you.
Can I just add on to that question then, because Mr. Heck, at least on the form that you, the evaluation form, it says that you will cover 100% of the operating costs, but it doesn't say anything about your share.
Yeah.
It does say 1.3 in construction.
Yep. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have it. I misprinted that. That should be closer to 1.8 because we're going to cover more than the cost of what the state would provide. And we will cover 100% of all the operating costs.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Bly, anything else you want to add?
No.
No.
Good. Okay. I hope that you'll consider this this proposal. I'm very proud to represent the city of Montgomery, and it's a wonderful community that we can support in this way.
Okay, so then the chair will move to, is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak to the bill? Chair will move to recommend that House File 2339 be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails.
Thank you,
Representative Bly. Representative Murphy. Mm-hmm. Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, when you held up the state plan, I thought back, I believe from my era, there is also a state plan on training facilities. So we have a fatter one than this to look at from an earlier time, too. But I digress. House File 1681 is asking for money for a project to update the Northeastern Regional Corrections Center, which is located in Representative Moline's district. But it's a facility that is a cooperation joint powers agency for five counties, Carlton, Cook, Kuchin Lake, and St. Louis counties. And it's worked very well for a very, very long time. And it needs updating. The Northeastern Regional Correction Center alleviates overcrowding in the jails up there, but it also is a place that addresses the needs of the counties and keeps people out of the state system by having this facility. And there would be many more persons sentenced to the state system if we did not have a working Northeastern Minnesota Regional Correction Center for the five counties. Northeastern Regional Correction Center was where Commissioner Roy worked before he became Commissioner Roy. It's where many correction officers for the state had administration experience. It is the home of the productive day, which we've been funding since the late 90s, in either through the counties or with help from the state, where we developed programs at NERC that kept prisoners or inmates or clients or the people that are sentenced in actual positions at the facility that teaches them something and skills and development so that they will hopefully not reoffend. Right now, the tasks that people can participate in, especially, are the meat processing facility and the gardening facility. But we need updating of facilities so that they can have more opportunities, so they don't get bored, so they become, it's just not wasted time. They have received a notice from the state that they have to take corrective action in order to keep, I believe it's the meat processing thing going. And so that is part of the request. Kay Arola is the director at NERC, and she's the real testimony.
Thank you. Representative Ms. Arela, would you introduce yourself for the record and provide us testimony?
I'm Kay Arela, and I'm the director of Arrowhead Regional Corrections. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for allowing us the opportunity to talk about our project this morning. We are here requesting $4 million to do capital improvements at the Northeast Regional Corrections Center. Arrowhead Regional Corrections owns and operates that facility, and as you heard, we are a joint powers agency formed between the five counties that make up the Arrowhead region. We have been in existence since 1976. We provide all of the correctional programming to that huge geographic area of the state, including all of the probation services. We own and operate a 48-bed juvenile detention and treatment facility and the Northeast Regional Correction Center. Northeast Regional Correction Center, as we call it, NERC, is a 150-bed correctional facility for adult men. It is located about 7 miles north of Duluth in Saginaw, Minnesota. And last year, over 600 men served their jail time in that facility. It is located on 3,200 acres, and in addition to being a traditional correctional facility, it is also a working farm. That makes it rather unique. We have all of the traditional correctional programming that you might expect. There's an outstanding education program where the men can get their GED, high school credits. Some are even earning college credits. We have a chemical dependency program, mental health services, medical services. But in addition, we are an actual operating farm. We produce hay and barley, which we primarily sell as a revenue to offset our operating expenses. We grow all kinds of produce, corn, potatoes, carrots, tomatoes. We raise chickens, turkeys, and pigs. Everything that we raise, the produce and the meat, then is used to feed the men and to offset those expenses. So when a man is sentenced to serve his time at NERC, we do an assessment and connect him to the correctional services that he will benefit from, but he also is assigned to a work group. The men there are assigned to work in the kitchen. They might learn food service skills. They may work in the maintenance department, building maintenance, grounds maintenance. They may work with the mechanic, learning some of those skills, and a lot of them work in the farm operation, in the meat and vegetable processing building, or actually out in the fields. That's a rather unique model, but it is one that we know is effective. We have looked at our outcomes and our recidivism rates, and we have found that about 83% of the men that serve their time at NERC do not commit new felonies for 3 years from discharge. That's a pretty good rate, and it's a really unique model. The issue at NERC is that it has been there a long time. Some of the buildings still date from the 1930s, and they are in dire need of repair. In total, we have 42 buildings on the NERC campus. A lot of those are our auxiliary buildings that support the programming, and a lot of them support the farm operation. In 2012, we were the recipients of a state bond appropriation in the amount of $737,000, which we matched. And at that time, we enjoyed broad bipartisan support for that appropriation. That money was used to replace the boiler and hot water system in the main building at NERC. And the main building houses the men. It also houses the food service and our administrative offices. That was really the first stage or phase of making these improvements at NERC, and that boiler came online about 6 weeks ago, so we're just completing that project. This is a very high priority for the five counties that are members of ARC. In fact, they have stepped up and are not only willing to match, but they are asking to partner and be super partners with the state. The counties are committed to $6 million in renovations at NERC. They are focusing on the main building, and that is just starting and going out to bids. Our request from the state is for $4 million, and those would focus on 19 of the other buildings on the campus. Those are things like the greenhouse needs new sheeting and roofing. We need to replace the meat and vegetable processing building. We need a new hay barn. The DOC has cited us on several of those buildings. There are three that we believe are in jeopardy of being seen as unfit, and they would impact operations because they include the meat and vegetable processing building, the hay barn, and our laundry facility. This is an important project to the region, and I know we touched on this a little bit, but we're in a very unique part of the state that is experiencing jail crowding, and that is not the usual in Minnesota. Two of our county jails, St. Louis County and Carleton County, are both experiencing overcrowding and boarding offenders out. This is at great expense to the county. So these 150 beds are critical to the corrections needs in that region. And in addition, as was pointed out, the better we do, the more effective we are at working with these men, the less likely they are to end up in a state prison bed at the state's expense, which is much higher. So this summer, both bonding committees toured NERC. We were happy to have them, and we have received very favorable feedback from those tours. We think that what they've shared with us indicates that they were impressed with our philosophy and our approach and supportive of this request, and we are hoping that you will find the same.
Ms. Arvila, I just want to make sure that we're the number here is accurate, too. So your ARC counties are contributing six. The project is four, and you're asking for three.
No. Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, when I had the bill drawn up for some reason in April of 2013, it was drawn up at $3 million, but now so, it's $4
million. So Representative Murphy, would you like me to make a motion to amend?
How kind of you to offer. I accept your offer.
All right, so the chair will move that on line 1.7 we delete $3 million and insert $4 million, and on line 1.13 we delete $3 million and insert $4 million. Is there any discussion on that motion? All those in favor, Representative Ward? No, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. Now we have the bill. Are there any other questions for Representative Murphy? Or Commissioner, do you want to say anything? Or are you?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Roy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Tom Roy, Commissioner of Corrections. And I thank Representative Murphy to suggest that my roots are in Northeast Minnesota, and that as commissioner I still have interest in that area. And I will tell you very frankly, I might be to blame for some of the condition of the Northeast Regional Correction Center, and I will sit here very humbly and say that for over a decade we struggled in northeastern Minnesota and had to put forth budgets to the county commissioners in that area that could be supported. And unfortunately, lots of the infrastructure in that area, including the Northeast Regional Correction Center, suffered because of lack of public money to do those projects. And I call that the decade of duct tape and baling wire. And to be perfectly frank with you, that facility for a long time was held together with those two things. You have seen some of the pictures. Those of you that have visited the facility, and if you made it out of the cellar, you were lucky. There are some areas of that facility that are scary, and as the inspection authority over that facility now, we do have concerns, and our inspectors have concerns about some of the structures on that facility. I am not in a position to make recommendations to you as to dollar amounts, but when folks from that organization talk about the condition, I can tell you that they are ethically presenting the facts. It is in tough shape. And, Mr. Chair, that those are the comments that I'll offer to you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Well, Representative Ward and then Representative Murphy for a closing comment.
Just real quick, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, thank you for bringing this forward. As you know, I worked there. Members, I worked there in the 1970s, and it was a pleasure to go back there and see it again this year. But I was amazed that, as Commissioner Roy said, back then in the 70s, there were buildings that were leaning, the barn in particular, and some others at the cell and others. But I was amazed at the, they're still in the same shape. And you know what? They do a lot of good work out there, members. They do a lot of good work, and the men out there, a lot of them start a new life out there. And so, we need to. Matter of fact, I think Commissioner Roy that. I worked in the school program out there, and I think the state of Minnesota just was recognized as, in the corrections, as one of the second highest GED producing in the corrections world. If I'm wrong on that, correct me. But they do a lot of good work, and so members, I think this is a really good project, and I just want to advocate and support it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It indeed is part of the communities of northeastern Minnesota, and the work that they do and the partnerships that they form, and it's a living place. It's not a place just to do time. Changes take place, as Representative Ward said, in the people when they're there. And if you listen to Ms. Arla's comments on about the percentages and recidivism, they learn something and they go out and they use what they learned to do well for themselves and their families. And it is a place that is truly a correctional facility. And they've had excellent staff through all the years and through every new thing that they've attempted. And we just can't let it go further into disrepair.
Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to speak on the bill? Seeing none, the chair will move to recommend that House File 1681 be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. We're adjourned. Thank you, Representative Murphy.